Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the update on the regulatory status of evenamide conference call. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Stefan Weber, CEO of Newron. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sandra, and good afternoon to everybody on this conference call. Good morning to our listeners in the United States. I'm on this call with Ravi Anand, our Chief Medical Officer, who is obviously the most appropriate person to answer the question and describe to you in detail the substance of today's calls. Before I hand over to Ravi, let me make a few introductory remarks. First of all, to those who are not close followers of Newron, let me remind you that evenamide is one of the three either approved or late-stage development compounds in our portfolio. So today's news are not related, for example, to sarizaturn, our treatment for the Rett disease, an orphan indication in about 30,000 to 35,000 patients in the United States and Europe. We are currently running a pivotal study in 129 patients in Rett, and we do confirm our guidance of expecting results of that pivotal study in Q4 of this year. And this could, if successful, turn into the first ever approved treatment for Rett syndrome. Today, we are also not discussing and presenting additional news on Sadago, our Parkinson add-on therapy that is approved in the European Union, Switzerland, in the United States, in Canada, Australia, Brazil, and Colombia. And we are expecting additional launches for that compound during the year, plus additional approvals in the territories where it has been filed. And we understand from our partner Sambon that they are advancing their preparations for a new label study with Sadago in levodopa-induced dyskinesia. So today's call is about evenamide, our voltage-gated sodium channel blocker that we are currently developing in two indications in schizophrenia, one for patients suffering from chronic schizophrenia who do no longer get the full benefit from their existing treatments for symptoms of their psychosis. And that affects about 70% of today's patients. Secondly, we develop evenamide in patients who suffer from treatment-resistant schizophrenia, from clozapine-treatment-resistant schizophrenia, whose psychotic symptoms are not responding any longer. And that is a very small population. It's almost orphan-like. We have advanced the compound in those two indications to a stage where in Q2 of this year, so in the next few weeks, we wanted to start those two pivotal studies. And we have gone through all the motions. We did have investigator meetings already. And the way I understand it, we also had the first national approvals to initiate the study and include patients. So that was the moment when we got a letter from the FDA referring to recently completed preclinical study in rats. And the FDA raised some concerns based on these results, and this is the object of the topic today. So what we are doing is we are responding to this letter, and we are addressing the FDA's questions. We will require a meeting with the FDA in person to understand fully what is their concern, and to prepare and finalize the design of the additional work that we might have to do. The obvious consequence is that we will not be able to start the two pivotal studies in Q2 of this year. We will see a delay that we can probably not qualify or quantify today fully. What we are committed to, and that is the reason why we have this call today, is to give you the full transparency, and we will be back with further information once we have had the call with the FDA. Let me make a few more statements on the quality of what we are discussing today. Events like the ones we are discussing are absolutely not unexpected with sodium channel blockers, the class of compounds that we are working on. And we have an extensive history of successfully conducting explanatory studies like the ones that FDA has asked us to do on other compounds. And one of those compounds is on the market, and none of the procedures in the past has led to a failure. We are absolutely committed to this important program because it is an absolutely unique new therapy in the space of schizophrenia We have no overlap at all with all the treatments which are on the market today. And those of you who are covering schizophrenia know there's no treatment alternative to clozapine in patients who are treatment resistant. And there's currently not even any late stage development program ongoing besides ours in treatment resistant schizophrenia. We have the funding it needs, and we have the scientific resources it needs to meet a request from the FDA and to get over the work that needs to be done and take our program back on track. And that all said, I hand over to Ravi to give us more color on the substance of this call. Ravi, over to you.
Thank you, Stefan. Good afternoon to everybody in Europe and good morning to those in the U.S. As Stefan has already outlined to you, evenamide is a sodium channel blocker. It's very unique that if this compound has no interaction with any other CNS receptors, enzymes, transporters, and it's probably unique that it's one of the very few compounds that inhibits stimulated release of glutamate, which has been shown to be a factor that leads to the presence of treatment resistance in patients with schizophrenia. We discussed the program in its entirety with the health authorities in the UK, Germany, Spain, Denmark, EMA, Canada, and FDA. And we had an end of phase two meeting with the FDA in which we went through all the data and the planned studies. The FDA cautiously was fully in agreement. Of course, we were at that time still completing some of the toxicology studies that are required for the eventual registration of the drug. This study in rats, which is a 26-week chronic toxicity study, was submitted to the FDA short time ago, and together with the protocols for which the study was required. The FDA came back to us last week with the comment that they were perplexed by some finding in the rat study. And as a result of that, they looked at the dog studies, etc. But dogs, as you probably know, are exquisitely sensitive to the CNS effects of sodium channel blockade. This issue we have already addressed with the FDA before also, and prior to initiating the phase two study, they had some issues, and we performed this phase two study with the precautions recommended by the FDA and demonstrated that we could get to therapeutic doses without any CNS events that were causally related to evenamide. Based upon the fact that this compound is a unique new chemical entity, the finding in the rats at a low dose is inexplicable, and there may be some CNS effects at higher doses, though not at lower doses, in dogs. The FDA felt that we probably need to address some of these issues before we start exposing, 1,500, 2,000 patients in phase three. Notably, the FDA has not asked us to do any repeat, any chronic toxicology study or any human long-term safety studies. The FDA has only asked us to conduct some explanatory studies in rats short-term to look at this more closely, and at the same time has asked us to do an explanatory study in human subjects short-term to be able to confirm the safety of using this drug in these patients. We have looked at the FDA letter in great detail, and having looked at it, I believe there is nothing there that we cannot address. Some of the issues actually we had already addressed in the meantime while we were preparing for the initiation of the program. clearly, this is going to affect the timeline. We plan to provide a response to the FDA very shortly, and we would be seeking a face-to-face meeting with the FDA. Not so much that because we don't understand their concerns or we don't know what to do, but we want to get final confirmation of the methodology used to study the issues raised, and basically want to come to an pathway that would then basically allow us to initiate the phase 3 program. We expect that we will be filing with the FDA in the next couple of weeks to request a meeting. Generally speaking, it can take up to about 45 days to 60 days to get a meeting with the FDA. And then, based upon the discussion and their final comments, we should be having a much better idea of the timeline that we will be following, and we should be able to update the market subsequently. At this stage, I probably do not have anything further to add, but I'm very open to answering any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ravi. Yes. So, Sandra, please go ahead with the Q&A section.
The first question comes from Samir Devani, RX Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Just a sort of follow-up, Ravi, to your comments. Could you give us your best guess on how long it would take you to do the two exploratory studies, one in rats and then the one in humans? I'm assuming that you can't do them. You have to be done sequentially. So if you could just give us your best guess as to how long those two studies might take you to complete. Thanks.
Sure. I think the studies, basically, the human studies that are asked for by the FDA are generally done in volunteers. They probably take about 1 to 2 months, you know, to complete in the field, and then probably a couple of months for the data analysis, submission, et cetera, et cetera. The rat study obviously will run in parallel to those studies, and those studies are not run sequentially, but they run in parallel, all of them. The rat study is a little bit of a matter of discussion, but clearly, since we have done already all the chronic tox studies, this study will not be a long-term study. It will be a short-term study, probably 1 month, 2 months, something like that, not more than that. You know, I can't give you any more further guidance, excepting to say that once we have the FDA meeting that agreed upon the plans, it will probably take us another 3 to 4 months for the execution.
Yeah, that's great. And then just maybe just one on in terms of the R&D cost impact of the delay, perhaps you could just outline how much potentially you would save this year from not having to spend this money. Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Samir. We don't have an answer on that yet because we need to see what the outcome of the FDA discussions will be and what effective delay we will have. Obviously, evenamide was a substantial part of this year's R&D cost budget, and if we should see, and we will see, a delay in the start of the pivotal studies, that would put provide relief to the R&D cost this year, but obviously we're not glad about that in this case.
Great, thanks, Stefan.
The next question comes from Bob Pooler, Valuation Lab. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Stefan and Ravi. Could you paint a little bit more color on what kind of CNS effects have been seen in the preclinicals? And then in the clinical trials, have you seen this effect in humans?
Sure. I think, Bob, just to remind you, we have dealt with safinamide, ralphinamide, which are mechanistic, you know, congeners of this compound. Sodium channel block produce really significant serious events in animal species. Somehow, even though the sodium channel homology is preserved across evolution, for some reason which we have never been able to understand, humans tolerate sodium channel blockers phenomenally well, whereas animal species don't. So in animal species, we see rigidity, we see animals lying down, we see you know, chin rubbing movements. We see some animals having seizure-like activities. Some animals may actually be having so many seizures that they have to be put down. Now, we haven't, those were not the events that led to the toxicity in the rat. The fact was that we didn't see anything, and that was a sudden, you know, unexpected finding in that animal.
Mm-hmm.
But in humans, to this date, we have done a healthy volunteer study in which we have gone to the same dose as we're proposing to go as in patients, and for which it was exquisitely tolerated. We could have even gone on dosing, but since we had already attained the plasma levels that we expect to be efficacious, we stopped. We subsequently did a phase 2 study in patients with schizophrenia who were on an antipsychotic and who were not doing well. And we basically went up to almost the same plasma concentrations. We did not see any evidence of causally related CNS toxicity, such as seeing any anything like EPS. We didn't see any hypotension. We didn't see anything of this type. So, again, it's the same thing that what we saw with sulfenamide and with lulfenamide. They are not well tolerated in animal species. Just to remind you that sulfenamide was on clinical hold for a period of time, and in the end, it was resolved without any finding at all coming out of it. Same thing for lulfenamide. The FDA had a clinical hold, which we had then addressed through an explanatory study. And again, the conclusion was that there is no causal toxicity related to the sodium channel blockade produced by lulfenamide. I don't want to be, trying to be predicting what's going to happen, but my feeling would be that looking at this compound and the fact that what I've seen in humans to this date, I do not expect that these findings are going to, these studies are going to lead to any significant adverse findings.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should be able to resolve this once we have conducted these studies.
Okay. So, yeah, actually, these findings have been seen before, and it actually maybe potentially might be a disconnect at the FDA, maybe not knowing the difference between, let's say, the preclinical tests in animals versus then the effect in humans, and because you don't see these effects. So the effects, the CNS effects, are not seen in humans. So that's what you're reporting is not an unexpected effect. So the what you're now reporting is where the issue, the FDA issues are actually aspects that you already know, which are due to these type of drugs channel. Okay. So it's not an unexpected finding.
Yeah.
That's for me important.
I think what I'm saying is basically this. In a way, the FDA judges every compound on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It does not take into account the class or anything else.
Yeah.
They have to human safety, and I think I don't think I want to prejudice the FDA by saying they were wrong or something. I mean, they know they caught signal. They think that they should investigate it before they allow 2,000 patients or so to be exposed to treatment. They obviously acted on the signal from the animal data. Now, it's the same kind of signal we have seen in other drugs.
Mm-hmm.
All sodium channel blockers, if you just go through, look at Tegretol, look at Lamotrigine, Topiramate, you'll all see the same kind of patterns. And all those drugs are extensively used in humans without having significant side effects. So from the human point of view, there was nothing there to see. And I'm hoping
mm-hmm.
that will how it'll be used.
Okay, that's important for me that it's not something unexpected, let's say, with the class itself or the molecule itself. And also that's not seen in humans. So hopefully you can address it quickly and start with the trials then. Thanks for taking the question then.
Sure.
The next question comes from Jean Conroy, Edison Investment Research. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. Just wanted to, you have to forgive me, the line was breaking up a little bit. I was just wondering if you could clarify specifically what the preclinical study in rat was that the FDA had
mm-hmm.
concerns with. And because this was a recent study, was this anything to do with the new combinations that you have planned as opposed to the combinations that you had already explored in the phase 2A trial?
Okay, very good question. Unfortunately, actually, the study is monotherapy. It has nothing to do with inhalation. It's a chronic 26-week study, which is required by under ICH to allow patients to continue long-term treatment and be registered. So it didn't have anything to do with the combination.
Okay.
It's just the study by itself, right?
Okay, brilliant. Thank you for clarifying that.
The next question comes from Lucy Codrington, Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one. Given this is something you have seen before in your previous products, would it not have made more sense to conduct this explanatory study as part of your submission anyway, or, you know, to potentially have foreseen this happening, or have I misunderstood something? Thank you.
Well, no, I think that your question, I can understand where the misunderstanding comes from. Yes, we have done explanatory studies before, but those explanatory studies were in different aspects of the sodium channel effects. So this is another aspect of the sodium channel effect. So in my wildest dreams, I could not have predicted that we would have to do such studies before. And you normally do not do explanatory studies unless you've seen toxicity, unless you see a problem. So otherwise, you would probably be doing 100 explanatory studies before you submit. The ICH defines what studies are mandatory to perform. Those are the ones we perform. Then, based upon the data that we get, we then look at what else to study. And this is one of those things. The data came in too close now from the starting point of view, and that's why we are having the situation that we are not initiating the program before conducting these studies.
That makes sense. Thank you.
The next question comes from Alex Cogot, Kempen. Please go ahead. Mr. Cogot, your line is open.
Hi, sorry. Thanks for taking my question. And apologies if it has been asked already, because I joined a little bit later. But what is the stance of the European regulator regarding the FDA's, you know, recent findings?
Yeah, I think probably the FDA is probably the fastest to provide feedback. So that's why the FDA response was the first one to come in. Actually, in the meantime, we have received responses from another European government, another European review, basically, which allows us to proceed. Please note that in Europe, the EMA or the CHMP do not review protocols. It's the member states which do it. The feedback from other agencies is still outstanding.
Right. And if I could just understand a little bit better, what would be the scope of the healthy volunteer study? Or the scale?
Wait, what would be the scope of the... Oh, you mean the number of subjects are you talking about?
Yeah, number of subjects, the length for... Yeah.
My feeling would be that basically probably both studies will be done for short-term duration, probably not exceeding a month or so, and probably they will be involving, generally speaking, volunteers, or maybe volunteers probably would be about 50, 60 in each study. One study could be performed in patients also in case we want to collect additional information on the drug in patients, but essentially both studies could be done in healthy volunteers.
Right, so you said 15... about 15 patients for a month, was that right?
No, I said about 50 to 60 volunteers. 50 to 60
volunteers, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. And does this impact, this delay impact at all your EIB, the ability to draw on the EIB loan to fund the trial?
No, the EIB loan comes with a few milestones, and if this hurdle is overcome successfully, the milestone with EIB will be reached and we can access the money. So there's no impact by the pure delay.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Henrietta Rumberger, AWP. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my question as well. Just because I didn't quite get it, what you said on the European response you received so far. Maybe you could repeat that for me. And the other one would be just two ones. So the second one would be on the timeline. if I mm-hmm. get it correctly, you expect the trials then to start, well, if all goes well, towards the end of the year, but that would be blue sky rather to get started next year. Is that a broad timeline we could agree on?
Okay, so let me explain to you first the European feedback situation. So prior to finalizing the protocols, we had submitted draft protocols to the health authorities in the UK, Germany, Spain, Denmark, Sweden, and obviously the CHMP. They had looked at all the data and had agreed with it. They had agreed to the designs of the studies, the doses, etc., everything. And this was the same situation with Canada and the same situation with the U.S. FDA. We then finalized protocols based upon this, and we needed long-term toxicity data, which study was still running at the time when we had these meetings. We submitted the protocols, and this new study came in. And that study basically had an unexpected finding in rats, which led the FDA to consider that whether they should ask us to do some more work before exposing a large number of patients. So that's the story. Since we have submitted the protocol already, we already had approval from one European country, and we are close to receiving approval for other countries. But the FDA is usually the fastest to review, so that's why we got the response back earliest. Now, regarding the timeline for starting, I cannot say much more on that. As I said, I think the treatment duration in the trials that we are talking about, the explanatory trials, probably would not be more than a month. We expect these to be in a small number of subjects, human subjects, could be healthy volunteers mainly, probably about 50 to 60. We expect to file for a meeting with the FDA in the next couple of weeks. It generally takes up to about 40, 45 days to get a meeting set, and then basically to have the meeting and get back the written response from the FDA. So basically, we probably expect about 2 months, 3 months before we get the FDA go ahead, and then we expect a few months of work to do the studies and report the data. That would basically decide the timeline. So in general, I would suggest that basically it's unlikely that we would start very in the fourth quarter this year. Probably it would go into next year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, so far there are no more questions.
So in that case, thank you all very much for attending this call. We'll be back to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call, and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.